All right, we got some hot topics today. Welcome to Stream Leader Report Live. It's the 100 TV Live panel. I'm Ross Brand from the Stream Leader Report, and I'm joined by our great panel with Claudia Santiago, Viva La Stage, Rebecca Gunter, Business in the Raw, and Hall of Fame podcaster Rob Greenlee from Trust Factor. And, well, Elon Musk is at it again. So I think it's about the third week in a row that he's been one of the main characters. We've got a lot of hot topics and great stories to get to. But why don't we start with Rob? And, of course, he's from the Trust Factor show, which you can watch on 100 TV. And Rob, we'll open it right up with the big news of the day.
Yeah, the whole AI emergence has definitely been a topic that I've spent a lot of time on in my Trust Factor series. So this rides right along with that as far as major developments. Elon Musk has decided to jump all in on the AI movement, which I've always assumed that he was a big player in the AI side, but he's decided to form a new company that's separate from Twitter and the X Corp that he's working on to form a new company called XAI, which is a new project that he's brought together a pretty impressive team of folks to work with him to converge on. I think his project of trying to create this concept of a truth GPT is the concept. So, and then he's got a couple of folks working with him as well that are from a project that's out there. It's called the Center for AI Safety. So one of the folks that he's kind of partnered with on this project is an organization that's really focused on creating AI technology that would be considered to be aligned more with humans. A common term in the AI industry right now is unaligned, which means that AI technology in many circles has been progressively moving towards being unaligned with the interests of humans. And it's kind of a little out of control right now. So I think what is going on here is there's an interest in trying to bring it back and say, you know, and show an example of what an AI project would be that would be more open, but yet safer for humanity as you look to the future. So that's the bigger story here. So, and I guess on the 14th, which I believe is tomorrow, there is going to be a Twitter Spaces discussion that's going to be hosted by Elon and the XAI team. So if you wanted to hear a lot more about this project, I would go check that out. I don't believe that they've announced a specific time for this on the 14th. So I think you'd have to monitor Elon's tweets because I'm sure he'll be putting that out. But that's to set it up. So I don't know what everybody wants to comment on this, but it's interesting. Does anybody have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that I do believe he was involved with OpenAI, which is responsible now.
Right.
Yeah, for ChatGPT, and he hasn't been happy with how that's rolled out, and he has a lot of concerns about where AI is going. Mm-hmm. Again, it's controversial how he's approached Twitter. I tend to think that overall he's done more good than bad. That's probably a minority opinion in the tech space, certainly, because there's always this sort of sneering tone to most of the articles. But I do not think that in any way he's somebody you could just blanket trust and say, you run it and you'll do good for everybody. But I have more faith in Elon than I do in the track record and the approach of a lot of people in the tech space. So I think it's a welcome addition. And I think he's done based on both his tech innovation and his turning around Twitter in the way that he has and opening things up into being, allowing free speech, being concerned about getting the truth out about what was really going on at Twitter and with the government influence. I think there's a lot of potential for him to do good in this space. And of course, he's got the knowledge of how all this works and where the threats are. And I'm hopeful that he will at least be somebody in that space who's looking out for the average person. Whether he is or not, I don't know. But that's how he's come across to some degree with the way that he's run Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, he's brought together quite a team from OpenAI, Google Research, Microsoft Research, which are the two other major players in this out there. And then DeepMind, which was a project that was started by Google as well. So there's quite an interesting team that he's pulled together on this project. And one of the big kind of uber questions, or the biggest questions about AI just in general, is that so we're seeing all these projects being started. You know, Google has a massive AI project underway. Microsoft did a licensing deal with the chat, the OpenAI chat GPT. I'm seeing the integration of chat GPT into DALL-E into like platforms like Skype. And that are kind of combining these together into one experience. And it does kind of make me wonder, you know, are we going to see like three or four of these AI platforms kind of proliferate in the future and become kind of those massive AI engines that we see? Or are we going to see this distributed across lots of smaller AI platforms, or ones that are run by Facebook and ones that are run by the government and ones that are run by media companies? Or, you know, how this kind of, and then what's the objectives of all of these AI companies, and how are they approaching the problem differently? So anyway, I'll be quiet now and the rest of the panel can comment a little bit on this too.
Does this mean you're going to get your AI constitution?
I would.
Ron, do you think?
Well, I think that the Center for AI Safety probably
That's what I'm saying. Like, you're at least getting a little closer.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Why is it that you think, speaking of, you know, whether we trust that Elon is going to have the, you know, the best interests at heart or not, in your opinion, from a trust factor perspective, why is it that people do not trust him? What's happening culturally?
Well, I think bigger picture wise, you know, I think that there is a certain amount of distrust of those that are playing in this space because there's so much mystery about it, right? And there's, you know, he's been pretty vocal about the dangers of it. So I think, and then in our culture, if you think about AI technology just in general, it's been dramatized in all sorts of movies and films like The Terminator and things like that as being this evil thing, right? So I think you know, if you listen to Elon talk about it, he talks about this conundrum of, you know, obviously we have to be worried about the Terminator scenario just because we want to prevent the Terminator scenario. So you can't just ignore something and hope that it will go away. You have to purposely try and avoid the negative aspects of this. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can't just bury your head in the sand and hope for the best. You have to be proactive about it and get out there and really actively. And that's why I came up with this AI constitution, which is basically spelling out, you know, again, probably what the Bill of Rights are for humans in the context of the AI revolution, right? So there's some limitations put on the AI, but that's just my idea. I haven't heard anybody else.
I think it's genius. And now you can sign me. I'm my first name on the petition. I think that's a great
that's
idea.
That's what I should do next, is start a petition for the AI constitution. We should ratify
Seriously. We didn't do anything with the internet. We made a decision, what, like 30 years ago, were we going to pay for it or was it going to be free? And we all said it's going to be free, and now we're paying for it in all kinds of other ways. So let's be proactive.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's either paying for it with our data or paying for it with our money. So
exactly.
Oh, right.
And our time and content.
Yeah, and
our time and content. They get for free, right.
Right, right.
You know, there's content I have on Facebook and I can't get it. I can't download it. And these are my performances, my stuff, and Facebook won't let me have access to it.
Oh, really? Crazy.
Once upon a time, you could just click the download button, boom, where you went. And then they shifted to this thing where then you had to connect your like Dropbox or whatever. Mm-hmm. You had to like sign into that. You had to give it access, throw it in there. And now there's certain content they will not even do, let me do that. And it's me.
But do you give up your rights, I think, when you join Facebook? You know, say these pictures are no longer mine and mine only. The content is no longer mine and mine only. And that's kind of like the gentleman's agreement. And, you know, it's all the more reason for the AI constitution. I'm getting t-shirts made.
We should start a campaign.
My take on Elon's new company is, wow, like we talked about Flip the Sumo, right, Rebecca? Last time. You know, it just seems like everything's going so quick. Everything's going quick. And a part of me, I've always been like, I don't act under pressure. It's something that I've been mentored in and trained. Mm-hmm. But the reality is some things are going so quick that even though it seems quick, I think it's been long in development. And some of us, like me, haven't really had my finger in the deep pulse of what's really going on. So I'm finding a challenge. I'm, to be very honest with you, I don't know a whole lot about AI, but even this show is caused me to dig deeper, and that's a good thing. I'm very interested in knowing the difference between what Elon's just launched and what we have. But as I'm digging deeper, I'm finding out there's a whole lot of other stuff. And it's like, how in the world do I wrap my head around that? And how do I practically implement, or do I implement? Or am I just aware of it?
I think also the term AI has come into the lexicon like so much now that there are things that, I mean, they were sort of had an AI element, and now they're being advertised as this is AI and that's AI. And I mean, there's an element of AI and an element of automation in a lot of the different web services and things that we use. All these algorithms that follow us on YouTube and decide what video to watch next because of what we watched before. I mean, I guess that could be qualified as AI, right? A machine is learning, so to speak, or a program is learning about our preferences and then to better feed us content. But now if you have an app and the app's job is to tell you how many feet you are from your destination or whatever, it's also going to say it's an AI app or whatever, because then, hey, it's learning as you go and it's readjust. Like, we've had GPS for a long time, but any service online can now almost be billed as an AI service if it provides updated information and is able to readjust to things that you do. I don't know if that's really AI or it's not AI, but now everything is, you know, is AI in a sense, from a marketing standpoint. Now, the other area that I think is why it seems like this is going so fast is because we don't know where the tipping point is in terms of when we lose control over this thing, or the first instance of where AI is being used to run something that affects a lot of people or could put people in danger or something else, and the machine learns enough to make a decision that we never thought it would make. And that's the first time people are going to be terrified. I don't know when that time's going to come or how far we are from it, but the people, for the most part, who've been involved with AI, who are proponents of it, have downplayed that, and those that don't like it have over who don't like AI have so overplayed the worst potential aspects of AI running every aspect of human endeavor that it's kind of hard to find a balanced approach on it, and to get a sense of what the real threats are and which ones we should be mitigating right now and what is the worst case scenario and so forth. There's so many different views on it, and it's hard to know with everybody having different vested interests where people are coming from.
And the long game, we don't know yet. You know, the long game we haven't figured out until it's just, to your point of being just a little too late. Like, damn.
I was listening to a Spaces session with Elon and a couple of congressmen that were talking about AI and AI safety. And Elon shared a lot of details on his thoughts, and some of the other panelists that were up there too, that were AI experts, were really, I think, mostly concerned about what's called AGI, which is artificial general intelligence, which is what these big language models will evolve into, because what we're seeing right now is GPT is pretty much just a text-based AI, right? So once you kind of converge everything together, where an AI can do basically can do anything really, then you kind of start to reach this level of beyond that's just like specialized AI. You're reaching into this realm of general intelligence, right? Of being able to take all concepts and be able to be intelligent about all data, all information. You know, it's almost like taking all of the intelligence of the whole human species and combining it into one entity. And that's what they think. We're going to hit that threshold in about 5 to 6 years. They said where all of the human intelligence will be combined into one massive AI that will have the ability to replace all of us.
Yeah. You know, I follow this guy. Right. Actually, Bruce, by the way, Bruce is in the comments there. He led me on to him. His name's Rick Beato. If some of you are watching, check him out on YouTube. He's in the entertainment industry, but it's very cool because he did a program where it was just him solo, but he often has, you know, guests and all that. But very solid guy and just a wealth of information. And he did a show on AI and just what it means in the music industry and all that. And, you know, one of the things that I never thought of, because I don't know if you guys have seen this thing, but somebody put out a Drake AI. And honestly, you can't tell the difference. It's quite something. Anyways, one of the things he brought up, which is tagging along to what you said here, Rob, is that some of the record labels, you know, they asked for that thing to be pulled down, blah, blah, blah. But really, was it Drake? No, it was AI. So there's all these legalities. But he brought up something really interesting that I never thought of. And that is that, and there was even a quote from, I can't remember which record label it was, but it was a big one. And it was basically insinuating that they have the business with the artist, and they may have a business without the artist. See what I mean? They might not even need us.
Right.
There's a very powerful Black Mirror in the new season that is that about movies being you're only, well, you've licensed the use of my reputation, image, and voice, but it's not the real actress. It just kind of gets in this real conundrum. But to that point,
and labels have already, some, been developing their business structure for just this.
Yeah, I think there's been speculation that I've heard from a variety of people from the entertainment industry to AI experts that will say is that the next big career, right? So as you think about AI putting a lot of people out of work, which it will do, there's no question about that. A lot of these jobs and labor, and especially when you get into robots, will basically put everybody out of work because the robots will be able to work 24/7 and they'll be inexpensive probably. But that's still unknown right now how much a robot will cost. But that the next big career opportunity is not too much different than what you are, Claudia, as a creator. And that creator has the skills to be able to manage and manipulate AI to create new artwork, new creative elements that the AI wouldn't normally be able to create, or you would, as the creator, would be able to control somewhat the AI and what it generates. It's almost like like a conductor of a orchestra, right?
So the artist as prompt engineer.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a lot of ways that is the next generation that we're going to see before the superintelligence takes over, right? Where it's going to be kind of completely autonomous from humans. But up until that point, it's going to be humans being able to properly prompt and kind of orchestrate the things that AI does, right? So, which is a specific skill that we're starting to see develop already.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, there's a lot to talk about with AI. I'm sure they're going to have a lot more discussions on this topic as we go along, but let's go on something a little bit lighter, but not completely light, because it affects courtroom, it affects a lot of different things, and that's, I call it the great emoji debate, and Rebecca will ask the question, are they valid or are they vapid? Rebecca?
Wonderful alliteration. Mm-hmm. Tim, I am definitely team emoji, so let's just put that out the gate. I think they are such a powerful way to communicate. However, now, certainly the court system and other type of legal fingers have their own question as to whether or not emojis are a valid thing. In the article that you're posting here, Ross, the news out of Canada is that a thumbs up emoji is now valid as a legal signature on a document. And in addition to that, emoji strings have been called into the courtroom for implications. There's a very interesting string of emojis that Ross will show us here shortly, that right there is a solicitation for sex work. And that that string used to be invalidated by, you know, kind of the court report or the official record. But now more and more people are bringing emojis into the argument that this is, you know, someone had this intent or that intent. And now the question is, will we be scanning through old tweets and looking for ways to implicate people in their shady practices? Because now emojis have a valid string of communication. So
what a clever workaround. I had really no idea what that meant when you sent it. Like I didn't read that article, but I chose that graphic because it had three emojis, and it never occurred to me what, like, I didn't even look closely at them. I'm at a level of, like, I know what the thumbs up is, the laughing with the tears, I know the 100. I don't know what all the emojis actually mean, and I don't use a lot of them. I mean, I use, like, the rocket taking off for launching a new show or a new business, the fire for a hot topic or something, the light bulb for an idea, but a lot of the faces, I don't really know what the expression is saying or what it means, and also what the other interpretations are beyond the literal of the crown or whatever was in that
signifier.
Yeah,
it is. I think that it is really indicative of the evolution of human language and right. What we accept. I mean, in the old days, you might have called this slang, but certainly over text messages, people are using strings of emojis to do all kinds of stuff, you know,
right, and it's
that
also
other people
a way,
might consider illegal.
It's also a way to get around different languages, right? So it's almost like what we've seen happen in the restrooms, right? Where people will put an icon up of a man or a woman, you know, that has a basic shape. It's a way to be able to bridge the divides of language, right? Which is, if someone speaks Spanish and someone speaks Japanese, but the sign is written in English, if it's a symbol or an icon, it can transcend those communication barriers.
Right? I don't think it was, isn't it Apple, Rob, where there's like no words on the instructions? It's all pictogram. It's all visual.
It's all emojis. No.
Maybe now, Will, we've leaked this idea. But the fact that people are now considering this to be valid and a form of, you know, a legal
of official communications, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's tripping me out. So,
are there going to be signature emojis too? Is that what's going to happen? You know, it'll be like a pencil, you know, kind of writing.
Remember the old days where, you know, the movie cuts to the illiterate criminal who's like sharpening the pencil to write X on the signature block. Now it's just a thumbs up.
Though I think there is an emoji that is of a hand with a pen.
There is.
Or a feather or something like that. So,
That right there gets my LinkedIn profile noticed more than others because I have a writer's emoji in the title. Right. I think they are a delightful way to communicate, but it's tripping me out now that you can be, you know, implicated in a crime because you happen to know this underground gray market.
One thing to think about is when somebody says, I think it would be great if we do X, Y, Z, and maybe you're giving a thumbs up like it's a cool idea. Now you have to think, like, is that thumbs up saying, I agree, I'm in on it, I want to be part of it, I'm contractually committing to going along with this idea, rather than like, hey, because also people use the thumbs up as like, okay, we're at the end of the conversation, right? And we use it like if I like your post, it doesn't mean that I'm buying into a contract. It just means like, hey, that was a nice post. Good for you, you know?
Oh my God, what a good point. I'm going to put a Facebook comment.
Could also mean I'm out of here.
Right. You know, like this discussion is, we got everything we needed to talk about just in terms of conversation. Like this conversation can end now. I'm good. You're good. It doesn't mean we agree on anything. It just means, hey.
Hey, well, that's going to have to be litigated by the, or decided by the jury or the judge. What was the intent of the thumb up? Was it to say, I'm out of here? Or is it to say, yeah, I'm binded to that contract? Right.
Rob Greenlee, Claudia Santiago, and Ross Brand are my new favorite high ticket retainer clients. You liked it. I'm going to have to go above the judge. We need a new, sorry, Claudia.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we need a string of emojis that now mimic like non-committal office talk. Like, I'm looking forward to learning more, just like this little.
So if Ross says, all four of you are contractually committed to doing this show every week, and we all do this on the video, can that be used as a binding contract, right? Did we create a binding contract?
I did give a thumbs up to that retainer thing. And of course, now I'm being really legally smart by stating it on video.
Right, exactly. You know. Now it's documented.
But,
right.
You know, obviously, I think the context matters. We're clearly joking around here. We're using it as an example. The least technically sophisticated judge or jury member can probably tell something about context, but it makes you think, do I want to use these emojis and what am I saying? I mean, certainly there are certain emojis that we do know don't mean, and I don't know most of them, but there are some that don't mean exactly what the picture says. And you have to be careful because if you use it in the wrong context, mm-hmm. you're sending a different message from what you intended. I guess it's a lot like we do with language, right?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes an eggplant isn't an eggplant.
That's yes.
There is there is multiple meanings to these, right?
Sometimes Anna, a banana is just a banana.
Sometimes it's not. Right.
Okay, so if you're texting me personally, I hate. If I have a personal friend and they give me the thumbs up on something, I hate it. I don't know what it is. There's just something so impersonal about a thumbs up. Give me a check mark. Give me a heart. Give me something, a smiley face. But don't give me the thumbs up. That's just
funny. It feels cheap. It feels cheap.
Right. Okay, let's do lunch.
Right.
Oh, jeez.
Good times.
So why don't we come back and at the end, we'll do another lightning round like we did last week. But this week we'll vote on what we think about emojis, valid or vapid.
But don't give a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Yeah, because I'll be contractually committed. All right. Let's move on to our next topic, which touches on the courtroom as well. And actually, the larger context of why I brought this up is, boy, at the worst end of the live streaming thing, there are some despicable people and people just doing some things that are dumb, some things that are so vain, and some things that are, you know, just reprehensible. And it gives live streaming a bad name. I mean, some people think live streaming is what we're doing. It's a talk show. It's a live video podcast. And then other people think of it as something the crazy person did on Facebook before they shot up a school or, you know, what have you. And so we have this story of, just to add to the great live stream fails and stupidity, is a medical doctor who was live streaming her surgeries on TikTok. Now, besides the obvious invasion of privacy, which I imagine I can't imagine most people going, yeah, it's cool. Put my surgery on TikTok. You know, maybe they'd allow a TV crew to come in for a documentary or something. But and then, of course, there's the idea, and this is the real concern. This is why, like, I'm very much like, don't live stream in your car. Don't live stream, you know, when you're doing certain things. Is as soon as that camera goes on, I don't care. It's in your mind. You're now performing for the camera. You're thinking about the camera. You're thinking about your lighting. You're thinking about, am I getting this on camera or not? And all those things when you need to be doing surgery or something like that. Not good. It's kind of an obvious guy thing, but I thought it had to be brought up because people just do stupid things with live streaming.
What was the pushback that people were going to be doing at-home surgeries?
I have no
idea. Or that it violated the privacy of the surgery.
Well, this particular person was live streaming plastic surgery, so cosmetic surgeries is what...
So she's probably trying to get more customers by, you know, look what I can do for this.
Yeah, she's probably live streaming a facelift or something like that.
And she botched some operations as well, I think so.
Ross, you always say that the beauty of live stream is pulling back the curtain, but I see you're drawing a line on the surgical curtain.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know... You know, there's the old, I think this is a legal thing, like there's an expectation of privacy when you're in surgery versus when you're walking out in the middle of the street, right? So I think if there's ever an expectation of privacy, it's when you're with your doctor, right? Now, I don't know, maybe some of these people signed off of it, and maybe it's because there's a belief that somehow doing this was what led to her poor practices, but I'm sure they're ethical rules and such against just, you know, live.
Who gives who gives consent and who doesn't?
Gives consent, yeah.
And also, what age does that start? Because I've seen a lot of kids grow up on Facebook who did not give consent to do it, and then suddenly are like, "You just Truman showed my whole life." So when does that start?
Well, exactly. You know, one of my first live streaming guys actually was a lawyer called Mitch Jackson, which a friend of mine. I love him. Anyway, there was another guy, and he was out of Florida, and he was live streaming plastic surgery. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I didn't continue to follow him over the years, but for the longest time, like, I just scratched my head. I was like, how is that legally possible? And I'm talking really invasive stuff. You know, mm-hmm. It wasn't just like lip fillers or anything like that, you know. So yeah, really wild. I'm actually gonna look him up. But I do know that he had a waiver that everybody signed that was going to be filmed. I don't know if they got a discount or what, but you know, way back then, Rossus was way, 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 way back, you know, early, even before Blab Days, dude was filming his surgeries live.
Yeah. I mean, Mitch is somebody who's very responsible about how he live streams from his, like, he's never, you know, slipped the phone into a court proceeding and live streamed it to TikTok, or, you know, he's always makes it clear he's not giving legal advice. Like, I just think, like, when you bring the phone and the camera into the wrong place, it's distracting you from, like, can you do your job, and what are the dangers to other people around you, and if you're also concerned about, you know, getting your video on TikTok, and, you know, it's just not something that works well for live streaming.
Yeah. Ross, what if you couldn't pay for the surgery, and the way that you could get it done is if you would agree to be live streamed?
How about, I think part of it may be, and when I think TikTok, and I don't know all the details, I'm thinking one person is probably setting it up on their phone. Like, hire a crew to come in, or hire a videographer, and trust them that you could just do your job and they'll take care of everything. Like, everything. Like, you don't have to think about, am I in the right space? Is the lighting better over here? Because far be it for me to think that somebody who's a plastic surgeon might also be vain themselves and, you know, very concerned about where am I getting my good side, or, you know, whatever. More so than even the average, you know, TV anchor or whatever. And so what is going on here, you know?
Right. You know, I learned a lot of things from Mitch that way too. Like, when, in the early days, he was kind of teaching, you know, when you're filming, when you're live streaming, try to keep the public out of your camera view. Try to avoid logos. You know, there's certain things that I've implemented through the years that really helped me. And even those, like, if I'm doing a show and I have musicians or dancers on board, honestly, I just tell them, do not film. We've got cameras up. We know where to point them. We've got permission from the venue to do it in this angle, in this, you know what I'm saying? And so, you know, as far as my team too, like, I just try to make them aware, you know, don't just throw something up and then throw it out there and have me performing, you know, just, you know, do a little damage control that way.
Right. And I mean, I think Mitch has been very big in the, you know, don't stream and drive, don't text and drive movement. He's been involved with cases related to that. And I think that's probably one of the best examples. I mean, there's nothing, it's not that there's anything wrong with texting or streaming. It's that if you're doing it while you're driving, then, I mean, I see so many people who are doing it and they make sure to look over at the camera when they make a point and whatever. And it's distracting. Like, your main job when you're driving is making sure you get to where you're going safely, and so do the other people on the road, right, have a safe experience. Now, there may be ways to set it up again to where the camera's looking in and you're not doing anything, but too many people who like to live stream in their car, they continually look up at the camera, and they do it no matter how much they might say, well, it's hands-free, it's this, no, but they're looking in the camera. You know, right. they are. You could just tell. And the way they look into their camera is when they make a point, and, you know, so there's a risk. There's definite risk to certain activities.
Yeah.
I think it's the camera's distracting. I mean, people love the camera. They hate the camera. They're nervous about the camera. They're aware that it's there. And then it becomes a question is what you're doing. Are the stakes too high to be distracted?
Well, we're told that we connect more with the audience if we look at the camera. And that's what happened to this woman that we're talking about here. Said at least part of her procedures that she did that were live streamed on social media, she was looking and speaking to the camera while performing liposuction on a patient's abdomen. And this patient suffered, I guess through this procedure, some severe damage and infection. So,
yeah.
So there's a, could be a kind of like a malpractice scenario there where it could be implied that the surgeon or the doctor wasn't paying attention to what they were doing. And then there was a negative outcome that could be used against her. Right.
Right. And that's where like live streaming isn't the best medium for this, right? The better thing would be to have somebody else record the video and then you go in and you do an explainer video afterwards
Separate.
Or whatever.
Right.
But again, if your goal is that you're talking to the audience and explaining them, then you aren't paying attention to what you should be paying attention to when you're doing surgery, one would think, right?
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to something more fun and inspiring. Claudia, you've got pink hair today, and we have a photo of an artist named Pink, and we advertised that we were going to talk about overcoming creative blocks, so bring it all together for us.
Okay, first I'm going to put in the chat Pink. All right, here we go. So, one of the reasons I brought this up is I've been going through a crazy month of a whole lot of transitions and even a bit of deep soul searching. So while it's fun, it is a little bit deep in some ways. One of the things that I had mentioned earlier is about Rick Beato and his talk about AI and all that and what it means to the entertainment industry. And wow, open up my eyes. And back in the 80s, there was a trend, well, throughout music, throughout history, you know, so much politics and music and culture and fashion, all that is, every time there's a transition, it affects so many things. And so in the 80s, it was big hair, it was big stages, big light shows, you know, tons of effect on the mic, you know, everybody was rocking out, big smoke shows. Okay. And the 80s were good to a lot of us in the entertainment industry. Along came the 90s and everything was kind of stripped down, changed, the sound changed, everything changed. The 80s bands that were massive were no longer getting work at the clubs, because there was less production on the other stuff and everything. So there was like this camp of 80s entertainment people that went really sour towards the 90s. Like they had a really bad attitude towards all the bands, new bands in the 90s. And then we moved to a lot more electronic and DJ stuff, which, you know, then it was one person with a mixing board and a few lights. So if you think about a club and the amount of money they had to put out in the 80s to put a full band rock show on versus the 90s and then the electronic stuff, it really changed the landscape. So there were a lot of people that kind of got disgruntled. And you know, in thinking about this, I have different shows. As some of you know, I produce as well as perform. And one of my shows is a rock show. And so when I hire musicians, like I don't hire my jazz musicians for my rock show. They're just a different breed. They're, you know, totally different. My Latin, my Latinos are different completely too. So my rock guys are amazing. They're very, some people think, well, can they even write music? Well, yeah, they can. They're amazing. Some of them have PhDs in music, you know, but some of them are younger. And one in particular is about 10 years younger. And, you know, we had a show to do. And there wasn't a whole lot of time. I'm traveling lots. I have a lot of other shows on the go. I have recording projects on the go. Like, I got a lot going on. And he's from that 90s era. And he brought to me, he said, you know what? Why don't we do, like, all these new songs? There are about 7 of them. And I shot him a list of stuff I already knew. And he didn't even respond to that. Didn't even give me the thumbs up. Instead, he shot me his own list. And I was like, wait a minute. Hold on a minute. This is my show. You know, I hire you. Like, I don't, when I work with musicians, I don't technically form a band. I'm an artist and I contract my musicians. So if scheduling doesn't allow, then I rotate some other guys in. It's just my business structure, how I work. It works for me as a recording artist. It helps me accept shows when others can't or whatever, right? So anyway, so he comes to me with this and I'm like, okay, I gave you my list. Like, why aren't you responding to that? Then he pushes his list again. So I picked like 3 from there and that wasn't enough. So at the, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just laughing when you say you picked 3 because that wasn't enough.
No, it wasn't enough to fill the show. We were short. And I said, well, what about 3 or 4 more from my list? No response. He shoves that list back in my face again. I was getting annoyed at this point. I was like, dang it, anyway, this is my show. Why are you, you know, the, you know, I had an attitude. And I had to get off my little high horse there and go, okay, listen, Claudia, are you in this time and season where everything's changing so rapidly, are you going to stay stuck to your old methods? Are you going to stay stuck just listening to one voice? Are you going to be open to listen to others? And I thought, you know what? Dang it anyway, I don't have that much time. I'm going to give it my best shot. Did I rock every tune? No. In fact, I missed some lyrics and timing, but I'm getting better at it. So one of the songs was by Pink. And that also kind of bugged me because I never follow Pink. And as an artist, I like to follow an artist if I'm going to cover them and like actually feel and breathe a little bit what they're about. There again, too, I had to stop and go, Claudia, just check it out. Just, you know, tip his way a bit here. You know, he's carrying something that you don't carry, and that is he's 10 years younger. He's got different influence. He was born in a different time. There might be some gold there, girl, that you're going to miss out on if you just stay stuck in your own mindset. So, anyways, we did it. We did a show. We rocked out 3 sets that night and killed it. Did I get it all right? No. And as I dug into Pink a little more, I found out some stuff about her. By the way, the song was called Raise Your Glass. And I sent you guys a link to one of her concerts. And honestly, she's wearing stuff I would never wear at a concert. Right. Her whole take on something is so different. But it's cool. And I found out something really, really neat, that she was a gymnast way back. Now, if you see some of her concerts, like, honestly, I can't even watch some of it. She goes flying high and, like, spirals around. It's like, there's no net. There's no nothing. And it's, like, friggin' scary. Anyway, I found out as I dug a little more into Pink that she didn't do that once upon a time, but she went to a Cher concert, or she saw Cher, and she saw the backup dancers or the backup people doing all these acrobatic things. And she just, and now Cher is older than her, and she just thought, you know what? I I like this. Why can't I do that? Why can't the singer do that? I mean, my eye goes off to that girl because I know how hard it is to sing and move, but I've never done acrobatics and sang. Right? So anyway, she implemented that. She worked hard at it. It wasn't just like she just kind of whipped it up. So anyways, at the end of the day, my questions for you guys today on some of this, what did I learn from that? I in this season especially, Claudia Santiago is going to make it part of her strategies is to stop and listen. Stop and think, okay, Claudia, maybe you need to look into this more. Maybe you need to accept different voices and see where that lands. So my question to you is, ready? Rebecca.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you like change?
I love change. And it's the most exciting. It's just the most exciting aspect of living life. And it breaks my heart when I see people, you know, just kind of reject things just because it's new without the opportunity to really evolve as a person. If we're not changing and adapting, particularly in this rapidly, you know, this landscape is like rapid fire. If we're not changing and adapting, if we're completely inflexible, we're going to be irrelevant really, really soon. And I champion embracing what the youngins are doing these days. I never understood why Gen X women were pushing back against millennials because they didn't want to work 12 hours a day for no extra money and no recognition. Like, millennials figured it out. You know, Gen Z is figuring it out. A lot of the things that we just come to the table with our cultural bias and, you know, our generational kind of thought, yeah, you know, echo chambers. And I think it's beautiful to embrace change and innovation and what's going on today. And if you don't do that, then you end up with kind of the same five friends all the time. I didn't know a lot about technology or leading edge stuff when I started this show with you guys. And now I feel like I can participate in a conversation so much more fully. So I'm a living example, as you are, Claudia, of embracing, you know, we can learn new things.
Okay, so one more question. What one thing will you change? Let me see. This month, I'm not going to pigeonhole you to this week. What one thing are you unsure about and kind of like skeptical, but you're thinking, you know what, Rebecca, I might need to. Yeah, tell me your one thing.
Well, dang, girl, live streaming was my one thing. I mean, Ross will tell you, I'd really not done it before until I was like, okay, let's try it. So that's definitely been my thing this year is live streaming and being much more visible and, trying this hat on entrepreneurially and seeing if we can't drive business. So it's not a future thing. It's kind of a now thing. It's been quite an interesting journey. I've learned a lot about myself and where I need to grow.
Okay. All right. For me too, it's like, where's the wisdom balance? Like for me, this girl is not going to get in doing any acrobatics anytime soon. And I'll limits. Tell you why. Because the wisdom factor says to me, nah, no, not without a net and maybe not even. So, but you know, where's our wisdom factor to balance out like how quickly we jump onto platforms, how quickly we turn around with the whole AI issue? Like, you know, where's our wisdom balance? Because, you know, we got to consider that too. Mm-hmm. Ross.
Yes.
Where's your wisdom balance?
My wisdom balance. That's interesting.
So
it's between what stays the same and what needs to change, or is that what you mean by wisdom?
Yeah, balance? Yeah. And like, do you, first of all, the question to all of you is, do you like change?
Not always, but mm-hmm. I think it's inevitable. So you can either fight it or flow with it, right? So I think as creators, I look at the, like, let's say the live streaming space. And one of the things I noticed for a while, besides the fact that a lot of people have dropped out at different times and new people come in, but a lot of the people have stuck with the same content. I'm not talking about the same show, but the same, like, if you put on Blab in 2015 or you put on, you know, Facebook Live in 2017 or YouTube in 2022, you're basically watching the same format, the same structure, but also the same topics and the same approach. And I think when it comes to, especially with online, but probably with any type of media content, you have to keep evolving. Like, you can, if you're a band, you can play the greatest hits, but, you know, it depends what your greatest hits are and how much of an audience you have for them. But you have to keep evolving. The topics you talked about, they're not going to be relevant forever. And you've got to come at them with a new angle, or you've got to find new topics. You've got to stay up with the pace of things. You've got to try new things. You've got to adopt the look of your show and the feel of your show and the pacing. And you've got to think about other things that are going on and how, you know, your piece of media that you're contributing to this content world fits in the larger picture of what's going on there. And are you growing and developing at all? Because if you're getting better at it and you're more in touch with your audience and you're more in touch with what's going on in the world, then how could you just roll out the same thing as you've been rolling out forever? So it doesn't mean you have to abandon your show, abandon your format, change topics completely, but you have to come at things and reinvent the way that you are approaching it based on what's happening outside of yourself and your own your own bubble.
Cynthia Bazin is a coach out of California. I think I introduced a few times ago, Ross. Amazing chick. I mean, she's great. And one of the things she's been live streaming, just amazing. Anyway, one of the things she said once that really stuck deep in my heart was, you just got to stay consistent, and consistency may look different for Rebecca, for Rob, for Ross. Some of you may live stream once a week, some once a month, some, whether it's live streaming or putting out posts. At the end of the day, as creators, stay consistent, and in the seasons of life and in business you are in. So in other words, don't drop out of the game completely, but stay your consistency. There's times when I'm traveling a lot and performing and I can't be doing something rigidly every week, but I'm still consistent online. I throw something out there, or I give people a piece of what I'm up to or whatever. Anyways, that consistency piece, I think, is a very cool thing. Rob.
Yes.
What question have I got for Rob? Hey, first of all, do you like change?
I'll be honest about it. I'm open to it, but it is uncomfortable. And it is also, I think, one element that we haven't talked about yet, and that is each of us have our comfort zones and also have our strengths and our weaknesses that we have in our current, you know, psyche or skill sets or things that we have experience in. So I think, you know, this question really gets back into building a different experience set. And sometimes that takes time and really kind of focus on what your internal goals are of what you want to accomplish. And I do think that there are some danger zones that go on here when you build your structure to your life and what you do based on what many other people are doing, right? I think you could fall into the trap of being a follower, not a leader. So I think, you know, where I've tried to live in my life is thinking ahead of what I'm seeing others do, not so much trying to copy what other people are doing because it's more popular or it's perceived to be more popular. If you can get ahead of the curve and do things that are different than anybody else you're seeing in the market. And you can somehow map that to change agents or change direction that you're seeing in the market from a trend line perspective, and you can kind of look it out and see where it's going. I think getting ahead of that and being able to evolve yourself beyond where we're the current way that the popular culture is taking us is kind of the mindset that I like to think about these things.
Very cool. I love what you said about each of us knowing ourselves. And I think that's a key piece and for all creators in overcoming blockages in overcoming, getting into areas and things that are really not our lane, so to speak, staying in our lane. One of the things that I bring up a lot, just because I've had so much success with it in both my own personal life and business, but also training other people in business that are, is the DISC system, and that's DISC, and getting to know your own makeup, your own aptitudes, but then all those that you work with. And every time I ask the questions, I can pretty well predict what Rob's going to say, what Rebecca's going to say, what Ross is going to say, because I can see the giftings and aptitudes that each of us carry. And it's a beautiful thing. So, Rob, you like to dig in and find out all the facts before you make a decision, before you jump on board. It's really cool to see. So what one thing would you change, Rob? What are you being stretched in right now for you as a creator to make a change, something that you know deep in your gut that you're going, you know what, this might help my business, this might help me grow. Just like I sat and listened to my musician, I went, you know what, this might help me grow, and it did. So what one thing are you going to implement?
I'm actually actively doing it right now. I'm putting myself out there in an extreme way, doing lots of online content, and really putting myself out there again. I mean, one of the reasons that I built my career was because I did a nationally syndicated radio show for many years, and that was definitely all about putting myself out there and building something that had an impact. So, and that's the mode that I've been on for many years. So it's really just kind of stretching myself constantly from the standpoint of my skills, my understanding of technology, and what's coming next. And that kind of plays off of what I just said earlier about trying to get ahead, not so much play to where the market is today. Though there's elements of what I'm doing that is like some of the things I'm doing with the 100 TV is playing off of my experience with like popular people on YouTube, right? So I've learned from what others have done, but I'm trying to think about ways that I can take topics and expand on in a way that hasn't been done before. So.
Very cool. And Ross, I forgot to ask you, what one thing are you going to implement or are you implementing right now? Change.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm trying to focus my time on the things that make the most difference. So I'm simplifying some things, like I'm consolidating. I've had several different, like each podcast has had its own website, and I'm bringing that. First, I brought it together into one feed, but I kept the other feeds alive. So now I'm taking the websites that house those other podcasts and bringing that together into my Livestream Universe website. So ultimately, each podcast will have its own name and branding. Like I kind of backed off the idea of like just making it one thing, but it will all, like, you'll be able to go to Livestream Universe website and get it all instead of going to each show having its own website. Right. So it's just like, it's more work now, but it's less work eventually, because it really wasn't the fact that I had all these different shows. It was the fact that I had all these different properties out there that I had to update. And if every show is updated on the same website, it's posted in the same place, is using the same host and so forth, then it really simplifies things and it lets me get back to doing more content rather than focusing on admin stuff that isn't really my strength.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And so on brand, because it's the live stream universe. And this is what's in the universe. So it's really on brand, Ross.
So good. And you know, my hat goes off to you, Ross, because that's a lot of work.
When he's not running a successful YouTube network full of creators with loads of shows, he's doing this other thing.
So as creators, we often can get stuck. And we can get stuck in the old, or we can get stuck in chasing the next shiny thing. There's different ways of being stuck, and how to overcome that, I think, is exactly what Rebecca, well, maybe one thought is one, what Rebecca just said, is stay on brand.
And in Ross's case, that's exactly what he's doing. He's staying on brand.
How do you get so lucky with that name?
Right?
It just has never ceased to. I've been jealous, jealous for years.
And you know what? There's the .ai now instead. Like, there's the .com, .live. I use the .rocks a lot. Now there's the .ai. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Like, who's going to switch over to that? Anyways, that's a whole other combo, but
I heard a new name that's being associated with you, Ross. It's a Dealcaster. Is that accurate?
There's a show, Dealcasters, Chris Stone and Jim Fuse, who wrote the foreword to my latest book.
Oh, okay. And that's where that comes from.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. They're awesome. They've been like real pioneers on Amazon Live, and so yeah, they're great guys.
Amazing. Well, do you have anything to share, you guys, to help other creators out there get unstuck?
The only thing I'll throw in here, one more thought, is that I agree with what you said about being consistent in general. I do think there's something to be said for taking breaks completely when you're not inspired or if you're feeling burned out, whatever. I also think that it's a sort of a pattern interrupt that, like, I know with sports, like, whenever I've taken time away, not, you know, quit or anything like that, but it's just like the season ends and you go on to something else, right? The first time back, your body's instincts are taking over and you're not overthinking what you're supposed to do. And if things go well, then the next time out, you're thinking about how you did what you did the day before and it doesn't go as well. So what I'm saying is, I think from, as a creator, if you get away from it for a little while, you give your brain time to process like what you've been learning and what's been working and those patterns, and you come back. And I always think people come back better when they take some time off. And that could be a month for some people. It could be a few weeks. It could be a summer. It could be a season, whatever. But, you know, I think sometimes you got to give the mind and body a chance to process what you've learned. And it also breaks up where you've patterned in bad habits that aren't what helps you the most. And then you get re-enthused. If you love doing it, you come back with, wow, I've missed this. I can't wait to do it again.
Yeah, so good, because we're human. You know, we've got to take care of that human thing. Do you own your... Oh, I didn't read that.
Oh, do you own your own platform? Does your platform own you?
That's what my dad used to say. Either you own things or things own you.
Yeah.
And I think when it comes to like the algorithm or the platform, do we own it or does it own us?
Yeah.
And if the answer is it owns me, it's time for a break.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really wise. Mm-hmm. All right, before we wrap up, let's do a quick round table. Up, down, which one are you voting? Is emojis, are they valid or vapid? Claudia?
Very valid.
Rebecca?
I use them a lot.
Valid, man. It's language. It's a signifier. We all can go into a common understanding around emojis just because it's a pictographic, and also, you know, yay for accessibility for people who might struggle with letters and numbers. So valid.
Rob?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think it's a form of new language that transcends language barriers, different language barriers, right? It basically symbolizes things, which is universal. But what's complicated is the different meanings of them based on how they're used with other things, which I guess also applies to regular language as well. So it's the context of the usage is just as relevant as the actual individual emoji, right?
Yeah, I might not always love them. I might not always understand them, but
there's a lot of them too.
Yeah, and they're certainly valid because that's how people are communicating. People get to choose language, and as our language changes and emojis are part of our language, it becomes valid if people are using it. You have to adapt to it. So whether it would have been my choice to introduce emojis into our language, it's here, it's valid, people are using it, and what it's acceptable to use it and how it's acceptable to use it. Now seeing it in business communication and all types of things where you would have thought, oh, this will never creep in here. It's a reality. And like, it's got its good sides and its bad sides, but we kind of got to adapt to it.
Yeah.
And that makes it valid.
Yeah. I do wonder one aspect of it is who is the creator of them, right? First of all, who's in control of emojis, right? And is there a regular flow of new ones that can keep up with the changes in the culture and the language?
Right? There is. And people lobby for them too. Where is the blank emoji? Because that's super important to us. And I think it's also a leading indicator of cultural change as well. Yeah. Like there is... withhold your opinions, but there is a pregnant man emoji. So like it is the arbiter of cultural change as well, and a worthy exploration therein, and not any different than any other language that's evolving and meaning is changing over time.
Yeah,
like who came up with the emojis and who dictates that?
That's a good question.
There's our homework for next week.
All right. Well, if you're with us, do let us know in the discussions. Was that?
Ross froze.
You froze for a minute.
Am I unfrozen?
Yeah. Now
you're up. All right. So with that, we're going to wrap it up for today. We'll be back next week, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Thursday on 100 TV for Hall of Fame podcaster Rob Greenlee of Trust Factor. Business in the Raw host, Rebecca Gunter. Entertainer, Viva La Stage, Claudia Santiago. I'm Ross Brand. This has been the Stream Leader Report Live, and we will see you again next week on another episode. Take care, everybody.